Welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Get in on the conversation. Call 1-877-669-1292.
And welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show right here on the True Talk Radio Network. So pleased to be here with you. You could call in. Number to call, 1-877-669-1292. So for the last 10 weeks, there has been a jihadi encampment at McGill University in downtown Montreal. The jihadists, funded by Iran, had taken over the university, at least the front end, the lower end of the university campus, and have refused to leave. They set up tents. They set up, tents. That's pretty much it. And they hunkered down and they were living there. Finally, after much pleading by McGill University and a demand by the premier of the province and the education minister, McGill finally decided that it was enough was enough. It was time to take down the jihadi camp. It was time to remove the jihadists that had decided to occupy public space, or private space in this case, and allow the campus to be for the students again, not for a jihadi movement. Now, these jihadists, don't get me wrong, they had it planned out. They knew exactly what they were doing. They attacked McGill buildings with impunity. They weren't punished for the attacks on McGill buildings. They were able to destroy countless windows and destroy property, and they were fine with that. Nothing happened. They didn't get arrested. Nothing really happened to them. They got sprayed a little bit by water from the police in one case where they occupied an administration building. But the final straw for McGill, who had been negotiating with terrorists, the final straw for McGill was when they attacked the building and broke windows and vandalized the building. That was their final straw. And so McGill went to the police and said to the police, hey, you got to remove this jihadi camp. And the police said, no, we're not going to do it. We want a peaceful resolution, they said. We want to be able to negotiate our way out of this. Well, they proved that you can't negotiate with terrorists. And McGill decided to negotiate with terrorists, and they lost their negotiation. They lost. And the terrorists stayed there for 10 weeks. So yesterday, McGill finally ordered a security company to remove this terrorist camp that was set up on their university campus. And what happened? Well, there was no violence, thank God. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got arrested, although they all should have been arrested. So what really happened? They found the most vile place ever. They had to bring in heavy machinery to remove the tents. Apparently, the jihadists that were there occupying McGill decided that washrooms and bathrooms weren't necessary, and so they did their business on the floor, on the grass, in the area surrounding their tents. And so that entire lower campus of McGill University is contaminated. And at least a foot of topsoil has to be removed before they could even consider allowing people there again. They had to bring in heavy machinery to remove this human waste. They also found rats and mice and garbage everywhere. So essentially, the third world country people that were there promoting third world country politics had decided to live like they live in the third world country, in squalor, in disgusting messes, in the area, it's just disgusting. Amongst, you know, they were living and sitting and eating where they went to the bathroom. It's just revolting, absolutely revolting. And this was supported by the masses. There were protests supporting these people. The mayor of Montreal decided that she wasn't going to force this scourge that hit McGill. She wasn't going to force them off campus. It's hard for me to understand how a Jew-hating group of people advocating Intifada, which is the indiscriminate killing of Jews in the streets, calling for the globalization of the murder of Jews, calling for the annihilation of the Israeli people. It's hard for me to understand how an Ivy League university or a university that feels or thinks that they're Ivy League could possibly tolerate that. It's extremely difficult for me to understand how this went on for 10 weeks and how McGill is going to recoup their reputation. We're at a point where the reputation of McGill, either they're a laughing stock because every other university across North America got rid of this garbage people. I don't even know how to refer to them anymore. These subhumans, they got rid of them in the first couple of days that they arrived on campus. And McGill allowed them to fester there for 10 weeks. What really bothers me about this whole thing, and should bother you too, is that there were no arrests, or very few arrests. So they removed an encampment of illegal occupiers, people who were illegally occupying private property. They removed them from the campus. They gave them eviction notices. They actually went around and gave them eviction notices. Some of them left on their own volition. Some of them had to be removed. But when they removed them, they didn't arrest them for squatting, for occupying somebody else's land, for terrorizing Jewish students, for discrimination, hate crimes. There's so many things they could have arrested them for. And they chose not to arrest them. So that means that these people who were funded, clearly funded by outside organizations, clearly funded by organizations that may have been funded by Iran or China or whoever, they allowed these people to just move on with their lives, to just go on. Which means, and let me just lay this out clearly, because this is what it means. It means that the Jewish population of Montreal potentially now has the potential to be standing in line at the supermarket behind a jihadist who had occupied McGill for 10 weeks and called for their murder. There were many professors at McGill who were part of this jihadi movement. They were not fired. They should have been fired immediately. They were not fired, and they still serve as professors at McGill University, even though as a professor, as a faculty member of the university, they violated university policy. Yet they're still employed by McGill. So how, and someone could, maybe someone could explain this to me. How are Jewish students at McGill supposed to, how could they possibly go to class and be successful in a class that's being taught by a faculty member who was part of the jihadi group that had occupied the campus for 10 weeks this summer? How's that possible? If I was a McGill student, a Jewish student at McGill, I'd be extremely worried about my professor and about passing and about doing well in my university courses. How could this professor be objective when they spend 10 weeks sitting on the lower campus, crapping on the floor, and calling for the genocide of Jewish people? How could they possibly be objective when evaluating Jewish students? These are questions that I'm asking. I haven't heard very much media asking this. I haven't heard very many people asking this, but this is the question. How is it possible that they could possibly, potentially at all, be objective to Jewish students in their class? Now, the people who were at this encampment, the people who were part of this camp, and I haven't even touched yet the jihadi training courses that they were giving there, training courses on resistance and revolution, which are essentially terrorist courses, courses on terrorism and how to commit terrorism against the Jewish people. So that was going on there too, but I haven't even touched that yet. We talked about that a few shows ago. I don't even know if I want to go there. I'm wondering how Jewish students at McGill are going to get by. What's going to stop a jihadi professor or a professor who professed his love to Hamas by occupying the campus for 10 weeks how is it possible that he's going to be that the professor is going to be objective, and how is it possible that a Jewish student is going to pass that course? So this is question number one. Question number two is, why would a Jewish student want to go to McGill anymore? Why would any Jew want to be a student at McGill, knowing that the university allowed this anti-Jewish, and I'm not going to say anti-Israel because it wasn't anti-Israel, it was anti-Jewish, this anti-Jewish protest, this anti-Jewish encampment, this jihadi camp that was training people on how to attack the Jewish community? Why would a Jew want to be part of a university that allowed that to fester on their campus for 10 weeks? Question number three, if you live in Montreal, how could you possibly fathom having a government, having a mayor of the city who allowed this to continue for 10 weeks and ordered her police to stand down? How could this possibly be acceptable, and why aren't the Jews of Montreal protesting in front of City Hall day in and day out, demanding the resignation of the mayor? Why haven't they been doing that for the last 10 weeks? Why do we have to wait for another election to throw this person out? Why has this person not been pushed out, drummed out, by the pressure of public protest? And if the Jewish community is not doing it, why don't decent people do it? Because I can't imagine there are too many decent people out there who could support the call for the indiscriminate killing of Jews in the streets of Montreal, who could support the support that they showed towards Hamas, who could support the fact that they set up a jihadi camp, a summer camp, where they're teaching revolution and how to commit revolution in Montreal and in Canada. And then we have a mayor, Valerie Plante in Montreal, who can't say the word anti-Semitism without putting the word Islamophobia after it. But then again, she has who to take after, because we have a prime minister in Ottawa who can't do the same thing either. And let's move up the ladder here. The premier of the province, the premier of Quebec, François Legault, actually called this encampment, this terroristic movement that formed at McGill, he called them illegal, and he ordered that they be removed. So when he saw that the city of Montreal wasn't going to remove the scourge on their campus, why didn't he enlist the provincial police to go in and do it? I know it's not their jurisdiction, but he could have made it their jurisdiction. He's in charge of that, or his minister of national security could have done that. Since these people were calling for the indiscriminate killing of Jews everywhere, would that not be considered a provincial emergency? And if not a provincial emergency, with people calling for globalizing the Intifada, which would be the indiscriminate attack on Jews in the streets everywhere. So if it wasn't a provincial emergency, wouldn't it be a national emergency? Shouldn't the Canadian government have gotten involved, maybe sent in the army to remove these thugs from McGill? Not 10 weeks later? It's just, I'm just throwing out thoughts here. Everyone's going to yell, it's not my jurisdiction, not my problem, and point fingers at everyone else. But at the end of the day, it is every single level of government's job to protect their citizenship. And when Jewish students were banned from campus, were blocked from entering campus, when they were counted at the door, when they were discriminated against, that's a violation of laws on every level of government. Why were those laws not enforced? And why are governments allowed to get away with this? Why are they not being held accountable by anyone, including the media? Well, I can explain the media. The media is easy to explain. Newspapers and radio stations and TV stations across the land get billions of dollars of funding from all levels of government. So shaking the boat and really rallying the troops to stand up against the government would not be in the best interest of most media or corporations. So they temper their outrage, or their faux outrage, because they care more about the bottom line than they care about reporting the true story. Media outlets like this one, who gets no funding from anyone, it's funded straight from my pocket, so there's no funding from anyone, I have nothing to lose. So I'm getting on here. I'm asking these tough questions. And I know I'll never get answers to any of these questions, but these are the questions that have to be asked. The questions are, why didn't any level of government really get involved and send in their people to go and dismantle this terroristic compound that was set up at McGill University? Especially after they announced that they were going to set up a jihadi camp to teach revolution and resistance over the summer. So you had to be a little scared. It is a little scary that this kind of movement was allowed to fester so long in the middle of a major city, the largest city in Quebec, that this movement was allowed to garner the support and attract the radicals, everyone from anarchists to socialists, to come and join the fun and live in their own feces on the campus of McGill University. It seems to me that normal, rational people went to bed and never woke up, and turned a blind eye to this horrific scene. Seems to me that we have to be outraged by this. Seems to me that we can't sit back quietly. Anti-Jewish behavior has been increasing right across the world lately. The catalyst for this, and I use catalyst as a very weak word. I don't actually mean this is the catalyst. This is what everyone's saying the catalyst is. They're saying the catalyst is the war in Gaza. The war in Gaza is the result of an attack on the Jewish people, a genocidal attack on the Jewish people. We all know what happened on October 7th. I don't have to go over it again with you. But that wasn't the catalyst of Jew hatred. And don't let anyone convince you or even try to convince you that that's the reason that Jew hatred is so rampant across North America today or across the world, basically. Don't let anyone try to convince you that Jew hatred started when Gaza attacked Israel and Israel went to defend themselves. That's not where Jew hatred started. And that's not where the Jew hatred of today, the stuff we're seeing across the world today, started. If you believe that, then you probably believe that the second intifada, the second indiscriminate killing of Jews, the second attempt of the Palestinian Authority to overthrow the Israeli government in 2000 started because Ariel Sharon visited the Temple Mount. That wasn't true either. These are all myths that are made up to cover the real truth. And the real truth is that the anti-Jewish sentiment that we're seeing across the world today, the underlying anti-Jewism, is a direct result of anti-Jewism. It's been there. It hasn't changed in years. It's an underlying current that exists and has existed for many, many years. Let's not be fooled by what the media is trying to tell you. Let's not be fooled by anyone. Back in 1991, at Concordia University, I personally witnessed Arabs attacking Jews at Concordia University in 1991. I know it happened earlier than that. I witnessed Arabs giving Nazi salutes to Jews, comparing Jews and the Israelis to Nazis and to Hitler. I witnessed all this. I've seen all this. I saw it again in 2000. I saw it again in 2020. I saw it in 2021, where I myself was at Concordia University and told to take my keep off my head because I was in an Islamic university. I was there when Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, was going to speak on campus, and a riot broke out by the same anarchists and thugs that took over McGill. And probably some of the same people, believe it or not. I was there, and I heard the chanting. It wasn't the chanting, kill the Zionists. It wasn't the chanting, stop Netanyahu. It was the chanting, stop the Jews. So when they say Zionists, and when they say we don't have anything against the Jewish people, we only have something against the Zionists, they mean the Jewish people. Let's not be fooled by the rhetoric and by the false narrative that they're creating. Let's be realistic. Let's be true. Let's talk the truth. The truth is that when these people say that they want to kill Zionists or they want to drive Zionists out of Israel, or they want to murder Zionists, or Zionists are Nazis, they're referring to Jews. That's who they're talking about. And if you think otherwise, well, explain it to me, because I don't get it. I don't get how you could think it's otherwise. It's amazing to me when they have the rallies and they say globalize the Intifada. Nobody gets what they're saying. Nobody has written an article. I might write an article about this. I'm probably going to write an article about this. Nobody has written an article. I haven't read one article that has talked about the term globalize the Intifada. And it's fascinating to me that nobody's focusing on that goal, on their goal of globalizing the Intifada. Now, I believe my enemies. I believe these people when they say they want to globalize the Intifada. I believe them. But what does globalizing the Intifada mean? So the Intifada, the original Intifada that happened in the 90s, was explained by the Palestinian Liberation Organization as an uprising against the oppression of the Israelis against the Palestinians. This was their explanation. And that the people living in Israel were sick and tired, the Arabs living in Israel and around Israel, in Israelis' occupation, were sick and tired of being oppressed by the Israelis, so they were uprising in order to overthrow their, or drive the Israelis out of their land, as they called it, and create their own country. That was the Intifada, the original Intifada. The second Intifada had basically the same tone, that their idea was that they were going to overthrow the Israeli government and push them out of the areas that they considered their land and create a state. That was their message. That was their public relations message for the second Intifada. What does globalizing the Intifada mean? Think about it for a second. If my goal was to attract and to attack a certain government who I felt was occupying my land, push them out of my land to create my own country, globalizing that means what? How could I globalize a localized issue? How could I globalize a localized fight? So if I'm fighting with you, I'm not fighting with everybody else. I'm fighting directly with you. So how do I globalize that? And this is the most interesting part of the whole thing, is that when you say globalize the Intifada, when you are calling for the globalization of the Intifada, then you're not calling upon the attack of Israeli interests. You're not calling upon the attack of the Israeli government or the attack of the Israeli soldiers, because globally they don't exist. Israeli government only exists in the state of Israel. Sure, if you want to attack an Israeli embassy somewhere, that's an attack on the Israeli government. But outside of attacking an Israeli embassy, Israel only exists in Israel. And the Israeli government only exists in Israel or in their embassies. So when you say globalize the Intifada, what you are saying is we're not interested in attacking Israelis. We're interested in attacking Jews. And you've started to see the results of globalization of the Intifada. This is why we see synagogues and schools being attacked. Because they can't attack the Israeli government globally. They could only attack the Jewish population. And by attacking the Jewish population, in their mind, they're attacking the state of Israel. But wait a second. What does a Jew in New York or a Jew in Montreal or a Jew in Toronto have to do with the state of Israel? Just because I support Zionism or the concept of Zionism doesn't make me an Israeli, doesn't give me any pull with the Israeli government, and doesn't allow me to represent the state of Israel in any other way. I don't even represent the community of the city of Montreal, the Jewish community. I represent myself. So I'm here on the show. It's the Howie Silberger Show, and I am talking on behalf of myself. I'm not talking on behalf of anyone else, and I never claim to be talking on behalf of anyone else. So how does globalizing the Intifada help creation of Palestine? It doesn't. But what their goal isn't the creation of Palestine. This is the thing that most people don't understand. The goal is not the creation of Palestine. They don't care about the land. They don't care about creating a Palestinian state. That is totally irrelevant to them. Their goal, as stated in the first clause of the Hamas Charter, is quite simple. Kill Jews wherever they live. Period. That's their goal. If a Jew is hiding under the rock's going to call out, hey, there's a Jew hiding under me. Come and kill him. It's a hadith from the Quran. And that is their only goal. Period. Nothing more than that. Everything else is commentary, as they say. So if that's their goal, to murder Jews anywhere they live, to annihilate the Jewish population, then globalizing Intifada makes sense. And the attacks on Jewish synagogues, the attacks on Jewish schools, the attacks on individual Jews, it all makes sense. Because that's their goal. Their goal is to follow through with the Hamas Charter and murder Jews wherever they are. The annihilation, the genocide of the Jewish people. They stated clearly, we have to start believing it. I don't know why we don't believe our enemies when they make clear, concise statements. They put it in writing. They say, hey, look, this is what we want. And they could play politics all they want. So they wrote that in 1988, and then in 1993, they changed it. Who cares? They wrote what they wanted at the beginning. This is their goal. They made it clear that their goal was to annihilate Jews. They said it two or three times in the charter. Read the original charter. Do a Google search and read it. Don't believe me. Do your own research. Read it. And you will see very clearly that they outline many different scenarios where we have to kill Jews. Not Israelis. Not the Israeli government. Not Israeli soldiers. Jews. Which is why they're attacking Jews in the diaspora, burning synagogues, throwing Molotov cocktails at synagogues, shooting up schools. Which is why on October 7th they attacked civilian populations, not military installations. They attacked, they took over a couple of military bases too. But they were more interested in raping, murdering, dismembering, burning alive men, women, and children who are innocents. They were more interested in doing that on October 7th than killing soldiers. Because their goal wasn't liberation of Palestine. Because murdering towns of people won't liberate your land. Their goal was the genocide of the Jewish people. It's their stated goal. It is their only goal. It has been their goal from day one. And it continues to be their goal. Annihilate the Jewish people. And until our leadership, until our politicians, until the people running the show believe that and understand that, the Jewish community is in big trouble. There's only one solution, and that's to go home. Go back to Israel. You want to be safe? That's the only place you could be safe. Because everywhere else in the world, they don't understand that the goal of the people who are standing in the street yelling Intifada, Intifada, there's no solution except Intifada revolution, just want to kill Jews. And if given the right motive and the right time and the right leadership, political leadership, we've seen it happen before. We'll see it happen again. Now, I hope that it doesn't. The chances are getting greater and greater of another kind of Holocaust. I'm Howie Silberger. Thank you for joining me. I'll see you again next show right here on TrueTalkRadio.com.